I would explain cryptocurrency that it's a digital exchange of value backed by cryptography, you know, complex mathematical transactions, you know, that's checked by math, that's kept on a public ledger. And so people would be familiar with the term blockchain. The Yes. blockchain is the public ledger.
Yes.
And in order to read or write from the ledger, you have to do the cryptography to unlock it. So the thing about cryptocurrency is, how do you take something that's digital and make it safe?
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon. Nick, welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast.
Always good to be here, Nils. How are you, man? How are things in life?
Things are good. It is warming up a little bit in New York City. It is beautiful blue skies today. And we have some exciting things to talk about today. We actually have something to pitch a little bit, and we are not hard sellers, as everybody in this podcast knows us. But you and I, I would say, I don't even know how to set this up fully, but one of the things I love about this podcast and the history of this podcast is the real ministry and the real things that have come out of casual conversations. And so you and I started doing this podcast, and you and I have a lot of, every time I'm in Dallas or you're in New York, we get together and we talk about so many different things. One of those things, if we were in Nashville, I remember sitting down and having a conversation about cryptocurrency. And today you and I now have a book together, Crypto for Good, that we, for the last year, maybe more than a year, have been writing together, studying crypto, having conversations about crypto, debating crypto, talking blockchain, being unbelievably confused about it, and being more and more sold on the future of cryptocurrency. So Nick, let's talk about cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I think everybody's first thoughts go to like, oh, it's speculative, high risk, incredibly volatile. Yes to all that.
And when we started this, it was like in the amazing craze of like, I think there's something to this cryptocurrency. And then it took off and then it crashed. And it was kind of like, is cryptocurrency dead? Yeah. It's been an unbelievable ride while we've been writing this book. And in midway through the book, I don't know about you, but I debated about stopping, you know, like, okay, maybe we're wasting our time with
this. Yeah, we might have missed it. I don't know maybe if we should really.
But in the process of studying it still, I would say I became more convinced even while we saw cryptocurrency on decline. Now, we're in a phase now where it's on the healthiest growth trajectory that I think we've ever seen. We don't know, though, where it's going from a value standpoint, but I believe I have more and more confidence of where it's going from a currency standpoint long term. But Nick, where do we begin the conversation for somebody? Because I'm assuming most people are where we were a year ago of like, okay, we've heard the buzz, but like, how do we, what is it?
Right. So one of the interesting things that that I learned, I think we've talked about this, but like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk and all those guys, when they started PayPal.
Yeah.
PayPal, the original idea was to allow people to trade currency digitally. So yes. It's, and really, if you think about currency just as a store of value, I mean, PayPal has been, what was it, 98, I think?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, same year I graduated high school, I was one of the early users of PayPal. In college, I had like this reputation among my buddies as being this eBay guy, because I would buy and sell stuff on eBay all the time. And so I was like into PayPal early. I'm like, this is amazing. Like, you know, you can send money.
Let's stop you. What was the, and you and I live such like aligned lives without knowing each other. What was like the craziest thing you ever bought on eBay?
So I've got so many good ones, but I'll tell you, I bought a Range Rover on eBay.
What?
I've bought like lots of vehicles, motorcycles and.
Yeah. I bought a motorcycle on eBay as well.
But I bought a Range Rover.
Yeah.
And, I technically my dad, I think, paid for it.
Okay. But
my brother was driving it.
And yeah.
He, We went to school at Taylor University. It's like these small country roads around there.
Yeah.
And one night, a drunk driver ran him off the road and swerved and hit a telephone pole. And that Range Rover was amazing, first of all, and how it took that impact and protected me, like walked away from it.
Wow.
But then you have this totaled Range Rover. I sold it on eBay for more than we bought it for.
Totaled.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. So, like, yeah. I love that. I bought like boats on, and I'm
really
a boater, but I bought like a boat for like $100 on eBay, and just went and picked it up. And then I remember we ditched the boat and just used the trailer and like rigged the trailer, and it became my four wheeler trailer. It was so crazy the things you could buy. I've also bought a guitar. I don't play guitar, but I bought a guitar for $1 on eBay. It was a new guitar in a bag that had a broken string. I got it for $1. eBay early days was nuts. I wish I was smarter about buying and selling stuff. I was more into buying crazy stuff, but I got some ridiculous good deals. Nick, I took us off track. I was just fascinated by
early days. I could talk about eBay for days.
Yeah, so but the early days of eBay and money and transactions was this digital currency with PayPal.
Yeah.
So they were, you're walking down this path of
well, and I think, so your question was like, where do we start? And I think as I've talked to people about it, that whole PayPal thing, something that's more familiar with people, it's tied into my bank account. We're, you know, using dollars for dollars, but we're sending them digitally.
Yeah.
Once you get your head around the idea that the original concept was to be able to transfer value digitally, we've been doing this for a long time.
Yep.
Like, I just got back from Brazil yesterday. I did the whole week without ever exchanging money, taking cash out of the bank.
Interesting.
You know, it's all like, what's the difference between your credit card and cryptocurrency anymore?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think it's probably, you know, backed by fiscal policy of the US government. That's probably the big difference, because we're still trading dollars, you know. But as a concept, like transferring value digitally is something that I think most people are very comfortable with.
Yes.
And so that's, I think, a place to start, because then it's a small step into, well, how does value get carried through cryptocurrency? And the fact that it's cryptography is in the word sounds a little scary.
Yeah.
So like what would you say to that? Like, what's the difference between, you know, using my credit card like cashless, and how do we get into cryptocurrency from there?
Well, and I think, and I'd love, I'm going to let you think about it for a minute while I answer that question. Is, if you had 30 seconds on an elevator to explain cryptocurrency to somebody, how would you explain it? But as I think through, you know, in our book, we go through practically like, what is money? What is cryptography? What is, you know, we kind of explain these foundations, but it's hard to explain on the fly. And so I'm curious how you might explain it. But as I think through where things have moved, is almost everything has been digitized. I gave a presentation. I was in La Crosse, Wisconsin this last weekend, giving a presentation on the impact of social media or social media and technologies on the family. And so what does all of these things mean? Well, the reality is, as I started just doing, looking at history of technology, what has happened with our cell phones from a digital standpoint is I no longer use a physical map. When I had to drive from Chicago to La Crosse, I pulled out Google Maps. It became digitized, the map. When I need to pay for something, I generally pay for it with a credit card, or it's in a digital format. When I'm reading the Bible, I'm not reading a physical print Bible, I'm reading a digital Bible on YouVersion. I literally like opened up my apps and thought, boy, this has replaced so many physical items in my life. I use the Things app, it's my checklist. So I'm using physical paper, I'm using that. When I check in for a flight, I use a digital, you know, a digital boarding pass. We have digitized so much of our life, and it's almost shocking that we in some ways we have digitized. So we've digitized money, that, but it's backed by print money. But at the end of the day, I think that's where it's almost like we have these coins and print money, which is just, it's just dated at the end of the day. Right. In moving to a digital currency, which is what Musk had in mind with PayPal early on, is like, it just logically makes sense. Now, there are a lot of trickle down effects as to where this is complicated. But I think the logic of, we're going to shift from physical fiat currency to a digital forms of currency just makes sense. And so the logic of that makes sense. How that fleshes out is, has, is becoming in the form of cryptocurrency, to me, it's inevitable. Currency will be digital in the future. Cryptocurrency seems like the most logical path to that being the future case. So that's my logic path a little bit. Nick, I'm curious your, I rambled for quite a bit of time there. your elevator pitch on what is cryptocurrency?
So I think the best way to, how I would explain cryptocurrency, you know, 30 seconds would be that it's a digital exchange of value backed by cryptography, you know, complex mathematical transactions, you know, that's checked by math, that's kept on a public ledger. And so people would be familiar with the term blockchain. The yes. blockchain is the public ledger.
Yes.
And in order to read or write from the ledger, you have to do the cryptography to unlock it. So the thing about cryptocurrency is, how do you take something that's digital and make it safe?
Yes.
And that public ledger is what keeps everybody safe and not getting scammed. Yep. Footnote, all of the scams with cryptocurrency that you hear about
yep.
are people that I think have failed to secure those funds, and they've been hacked and people have removed it. Like yep. the same thing can happen if you give out your bank account number and your password.
Yes. Yes.
So it's like, it's not inherent to like the crypto for the most case.
Yes.
The cryptocurrency hasn't failed. I think the processes with which people have stored it are those big public failures most recently. Yep.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, when you, and I think I want to get into some FAQs that we get around cryptocurrency, but when you think about money fraud is nothing new. People right. stealing money is nothing new. People creating fake money. You know, I remember I had friends in high school that got arrested for, they literally created fake money and were using it to buy stuff, got in a ton of trouble. Well, they were one of millions of people. Or I don't know, millions, maybe thousands.
Bad
people.
Friend choices in high school.
I did make bad friend choices in high school.
Counterfeiters.
I will fully admit to that. And thank God I was not involved.
I had some friends that shoplifted, but you're talking about like counterfeiting money.
Well, I was also arrested for shoplifting. So I was actually the bad friend. They were counterfeiting money while I was stealing things. And so well, that's a whole nother story of getting arrested for shoplifting.
The things you learn.
Yeah. You were probably praying. And so this is where our paths differentiated.
I was too scared to do anything bad.
I wish I was more scared. So we go down some paths, man. So I don't even know how to bring this back. I don't know.
Sorry. Monetary okay. fraud.
Monetary fraud. So that's a part of history of money. Yeah. And I think one of the confusing points that people have about cryptocurrency, and we hear like Warren Buffett hates cryptocurrency. Warren right. Buffett is the worst. I think the one of the points that a lot of people make is they compare cryptocurrency to the stock market. And a lot of that I think is because of the value that it's brought up. And I think my perception is it's better compared to a dollar or a euro or a peso than the stock market, but maybe it's both. Nick, how do you perceive cryptocurrency, or what do you really compare it to as you compare it to the world today as to what it's made to be?
I mean, I always struggle because I'm not trying to convince anybody, you know. I think we're going to see this play out the way that it plays out. But because of PayPal, because of the move to like cashless, you know, with a lot of our just everyday lives, I think we are going this way.
Yeah.
And so one of the reasons, I mean, I'll answer your question here in a minute, but one of the reasons we wrote Crypto for Good.
Yeah, good little picture. For those listening, he just held up the book and smiled.
I think I'm going to hold it up
That's our thumbnail for our YouTube video.
Crypto right for good. I need to work on mine. Yeah. One of the reasons we wrote the book was to help people just kind of, and for ourselves, to get our heads wrapped around this concept. Like, if this is where things seem to be going, how can we get more familiar with this and understand, are there opportunities that are going to exist, especially kind of in the early days, take advantage of this new, I'd say it's really a combination of value exchange and technology, you know.
Yep.
But I mean, what I compare it to, I think for that reason, in an attempt to kind of become more comfortable with the concept and put it into a box that I already know, I think about it as like the US dollar or something like that.
Yep.
If volatility is the big problem that, you know, scares people off, mm-hmm. the whole thing might disappear. What's really backing it? You know,
yep.
Those are all, I think, appropriate questions. But when you solve volatility problems and when you solve or answer the questions about what's holding this up, then what do you do with it? You know, because I think if you take the time to really kind of dig in and try to understand what's happening here, some of those questions get resolved fairly quickly.
Yep.
So, you know, I mentioned I was in Brazil last week. We were with the Christian Vision executive team. I'm one of five directors with CV, and we cover basically all the regions in the world. And our guys from South America were talking to us about what's going on in Venezuela.
Yep.
We've got some pastors there. We've got church planters in Venezuela. These guys, I mean, I don't know if you've looked into what's going on in Venezuela recently, but you've got like 1,000,000% inflation, you know? There's crazy inflation numbers. You've got the...
And how does that happen? How does that happen?
Well, right now, I mean, you've got parallel governments. So you had the president that was ousted, but wasn't really ousted, didn't leave. So you've got like two competing governments.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, the people are suffering. Like we saw photos of the grocery store shelves. There's nothing.
Yep.
You know, there's no produce. There's no bread. There's no fuel.
Yep.
Everything's just... You had one of the most wealthy countries in the world, one of the most wealthy in South America for sure.
Yep.
And now it's just devastated.
Yep.
And so we've got pastors that are planting churches. The good news is that the gospel is just awesome. In those types of environments, the gospel is going forward with power and we're seeing some amazing things happen.
Incredible.
But in an effort to support those guys, like how do you, in an environment like that, how do you move money or resource into a country to help support those missionaries?
Yeah.
You know, and so we're talking about like, I mean, everything's on the table. Like, do you fill bags of money and carry it across the border? Do you, you know, transfer something into a bank account, but you have to pay like, you know, 4 or 5% on currency transactions and all this stuff. Yeah. So, you know, these are real problems. And I'm the one that was like, has anybody considered cryptocurrency, you know, for moving assets into there? Now, I made that comment without knowing the legal implications of it. And just for the record, I want to say that was not pursued and we're not doing it because of all of these questions. It like, it came out of my mouth and the immediate reaction was no. And we moved on. And I think people thought I was kind of making a joke. So just for the record, we didn't pursue it at all. But as an exercise in thought,
yes.
Like, how would you do that, Nils? Like, if you had to get money into a country that was unstable, is cryptocurrency a viable option?
Well, and I think this is...
And if it is viable, why is it? What makes it different than a dollar?
Well, and I think at the end of the day, it's a store of value. We agree it's worth its value. And so when you think about money, buy a hamburger and it's going to be $5 and we all agree that, you know, and five hamburgers might be worth, you know, the same as $25, which could get me a carafe of coffee at Starbucks. So we kind of agree of like, these items are worth this much because we exchange these stores of value for that. And so whether you choose to use a US dollar or a euro, and that's where the exchange rate comes in of like, you know, that a hamburger might be worth cost $5, but it's cost 4 euros. And that's the, then creates an exchange rate of what, so as you just get into money and the cryptocurrency or Bitcoin as a form of cryptocurrency can have a similar value and it might be worth 2 Bitcoin. And so then that's what it's worth. That's that becomes that agreed store of value for exchange. So as you think about then taking currency into a country, you then can use a digital currency. You know, it's kind of one of those things of like, there is logic of like, literally you're going to carry a bag of money in and it's going to have an exchange rate, you know, and you could convert it to the local currency or transact it, exchange it. Or At the end of the day, this is where cryptocurrency just makes so much sense, where you just come in and you use that cryptocurrency. And if you could literally use that for actual purchases, it's incredible value, or you can exchange it for local currency that can be used in that locate or that area. It gets very complicated as I think you get into to money itself. But I think when you can take out the store of value being a physical item and it can live fully digital and it can be monitored, I think that's where it really, and I say monitor, it's on that public ledger, that blockchain. There's a lot of logic to that exchange. And I think one of the big downsides to cryptocurrency that people have, and Bitcoin in particular, is, well, isn't that just what drug dealers use? Isn't that just what's used for sale of drugs online, or, you know, all kinds of, I don't know, bad things. And I think the reality is, no, it's not just used for that, but it is significantly used for that. And there's a level, what's interesting is there is a level of anonymity connected to cryptocurrency, but the reality is so is with paper money. People buy drugs with paper money. And so having a digital form of currency, it's actually more trackable, but the way cryptocurrency generally is created, it gives the opportunity for anonymity in exchange. So there's,
just to be clear,
layers to all of this.
Yeah, just to be clear, you're saying that like the anonymity doesn't necessarily invalidate the use of cryptocurrency for everybody else.
I think the anonymity, and I think people are often just making blanket statements about cryptocurrency for how some of the public uses of it have been. And I think we can always go back to any kind of currency as to how things are misused. And I think we saw the same thing of the internet. The internet was just pornography. You know, like it was just created so people could look at porn. And that's the only thing that churches shouldn't have a website, because people look at pornography on the internet. And so if you have a website, you're supporting pornography. That was the logic that I think a lot of church leaders have had about the internet. And social media is where people cheat on their wives. And so you wouldn't want to do that, because that's where affairs are started. And I think there's no doubt any new innovation, there is the devil is going to be involved, you know, like there's going to be negative uses for it. And I think there's significant opportunities. So bringing this, Nick, to the church leader, and like, why does cryptocurrency matter to a church leader? Why is this an important conversation for church leaders?
Well, I think we're at the very beginning, of why it should matter. So if that's, you know, a long timeline, we're probably at the very starting point. And so, for anybody that's made it this far into this episode and is still listening, first of all, thank you. But maybe we'll edit it to the end here. But because even in this conversation, we've been kind of rambling about a bit, because it's hard to get, here's what I struggle with. It's hard to answer this question.
Okay.
Because it's hard for me to today, even with what I know about it, to visualize use cases that are really beneficial, where cryptocurrency is not only a viable solution, but probably the right one.
Yes.
Because you can still do a lot of other things with existing methods.
Yep.
You know, there's probably better options out there. But I think the reason why it's important to start paying attention to this is one of the main reasons we wrote the book, is because, like, with this incredible gain in value that's happened over the last couple of years with Bitcoin specifically, you have a lot of people out there, I personally know a lot of believers, that have made a lot of money in cryptocurrency, in Bitcoin investment, if you want to call it that. I think most of the time it's more like interest. I bought that and I forgot about it. And oh, look, now it's worth $3,000. That there's one of the problems with Bitcoin is, like, there's not a lot of places that I can use it currently.
Yes.
So, like, with your hamburger example, have you tried to pay your rent with hamburgers recently? You know, it doesn't go too well.
I do ask every time I go to Starbucks if I can pay with Bitcoin, because there are a lot of rumors that they're going to be accepting Bitcoin. And I'm trying to do that to see if they will begin to ask up. I want to pay for coffee with Bitcoin, by the way.
Yeah. Well, Amazon, I think you can buy things with Bitcoin on Amazon now. So, you know, it's starting to come about. But what about a believer that, you know, by accident made a bunch of money and is looking for some place to kind of put that or make some type of donation?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one thing, and that's happening.
And that's a big thing. by the way.
It's a huge thing. I think also this idea about if the blockchain is a public ledger, we haven't really talked about this in this episode, but we do in the book, Crypto for Good, is if everything's public, then it's secure by default. Yep. So like security, if I'm trying to keep people out, what if you just give it all away? Then it's secure because everybody has access to it. That's the idea behind the blockchain. And then to be able to write to it, you know, there's this kind of verification method that happens. If I give a donation to some type of relief effort, like when the hurricanes hit Haiti, we read some reports that were like, you know, $10 billion went missing. Like we can't account for where that money went, what happened to it. Conan O'Brien has this new episode out, or this new series out on Netflix, Conan Abroad, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
And he visits Haiti and like he gets accosted in the streets because they're like, listen, all you white people come down here and all you want to do is show all the bad parts. And there's a lot of bad parts that still exist. But like here we are years and years removed from that disaster. And he's there on location saying, it's still pretty bad. But we sent all this money down there and we don't know where it went.
Yeah.
Blockchain kind of helps with that problem. If you were to give money and implement it in a place like Haiti, you could see every transaction along the way. You could account for every single penny spent and where it went. Yep. Think about that in other relief efforts. Like if we're sending money into, you know, for foreign missions into different countries around the world where the infrastructure and the reporting back is somewhat suspect. Yep. Like this is a solution for that.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are going to think creatively about this in the next couple of years and build some really great software and technology applications that allow Bitcoin to give more transparency into global missions and giving, and not just the giving aspect, but the implementation of those dollars.
Yes.
I think that's probably the single biggest reason why church leaders in the missions community should be paying attention and thinking about this critically right now. So like, rather than saying, oh, you know, it's the currency of drug dealers, let's recognize there's some really good applications that haven't yet been developed, but maybe we can do those, put those in place and do a lot of good with it.
Yes.
I think that's what's most interesting to me. And I think you share that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in this podcast and in the conversations we're a part of, and I love the chaotic rambling of this conversation we're having, because Nick, these are the conversations we're having around fire pits and, you know, across dinner tables of around this is it's so much. There's so much to cryptocurrency that I think has layers of effect that I think we're just scratching the surface of. Because if we were talking about social media 12 years ago, it would be like Facebook Live wasn't a thing. You know, like there are things of advertising on social media was kind of a new thing, or just at the beginning. It's social media has come so far. Where this technology, blockchain, is going to have a ripple effect into so many different things that I think our minds are just beginning to. So for a year, you and I have just been wrapping our minds around this, and it's a bit chaotic right now.
Yeah.
But I think the more we wrap our minds around it, the more significant this conversation becomes. And I think especially when you think we're going to be talking about blockchain a lot, I think in the next 2 years, as you think about missions work out of a church, blockchain is going to be a big part of that. And I think as we think about cryptocurrency and sending money overseas is where we've often used Western Union. I think crypto is going to add tremendous efficiencies to that. And then I think the practical side for church leaders today is there are probably, it might be one or two people, some people now that might be interested in donating to your church in the form of cryptocurrency. You should be ready to receive that, because what they're going to do otherwise, and what a crypto fanatic is not going to be interested in, they're going to have to convert it to USD or wherever your church is and then donate it, which is going to have, there's going to be tax complications to that that they're not going to want to deal with. And so being ready to accept cryptocurrency is I think your first step. And then I think you get ahead of this conversation. So we're next, you know, it's 2019 right now. cryptocurrency is not going to overtake the US dollar by the end of 2020. This is going to take time. And we don't know if Bitcoin is the future of cryptocurrency as a primary form of cryptocurrency. It is right now. But I think there's so many paths as to where this is going. So I think, Nick, as we start getting practical for church leaders here, I've got a couple of recommendations. I'm curious where you would go as well. The first thing is I would go and get some cryptocurrency yourself. You can use the Coinbase app and spend $20, put $20 on there, or the Cash app that Jack Dorsey created, the guy founded Twitter, and you can get Bitcoin on there. But use one of these apps and get some cryptocurrency, because it will begin to make more sense and you'll begin to pay more attention. You don't have to put $100 into it or even $1,000. You put $20 into it and just get some cryptocurrency and find somebody else who has it and exchange with them. Nick, I remember you and I, the first time we traded crypto a little bit, we wanted to see what it's like. And I sent you some Bitcoin and you sent me some Ethereum and we exchanged cryptocurrency. So do that. And then I would say the second step is get ready to accept cryptocurrency. And so, Nick, we've partnered with an organization that's doing that called Ingiven. And so I'm fired up. And I think this is where a lot of the conversation really got real for us. We were kind of like, crypto is fascinating and interesting. And then it was like, but wait a minute, like, what do you do with it? Well, Ingiven has in many ways solved, I think, the first big problem of receiving cryptocurrency. And so in given it's, I think it's $10 a month or $100 for a year, and you can literally begin receiving cryptocurrency, and it's incredibly simple. So anyways, I think those are your first two steps, because then you'll begin paying attention to it and then you're ready to receive it. And at this point in 2019, I think that's where a church needs to be positioned in cryptocurrency. It doesn't mean you're converting everything to crypto. It just means you're preparing for what's likely to come. Nick, I'm curious your other practical thoughts for church leaders here.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if there's these conversations that are already happening, especially within your church, you know, I think engaging with it and showing that, look, there's a space for this, you know, is appropriate. If anything else, if people are listening to this and they're like, oh, I've just kind of tuned all that out because it's, you know, scary, weird, going away, not lasting, I'd say just check all of those assumptions. Yep. And maybe re-engage. I mean, I think that's probably the first part. Yeah. I love the recommendation of just buy some and just to experience it and like, yep, understand it. I mean, you know, we buy books all the time at like that $20 price point. Crypto for good, by the way, is much less, much lower price point. So we want this to be accessible. Yeah.
It's $9.95. I've never even looked to see how much it cost. You go to Amazon and you can buy it, by the way.
Available on Kindle as well. But like,
we'll be able to buy it with Bitcoin, by the way. If it's not already available on the Dunham & Company website, it will be soon available to buy with Bitcoin. So
nice.
The folks out there.
Practice what you preach, folks.
There you go.
What was I going to say? Man, talking about rambling. The we spend money all the time. I just did my taxes. I looked at how much I spent on like books last year. Yeah. You know, trying to like just educate myself on stuff. Look at it just as an investment in your own education. Spend $20, play around with it. I think, you know, you buy Bitcoin and that opens up a world to all sorts of other things too. There might be people listening that are really into like stock investing and options trading and things like that. And there's a website called Binance, which, once you have Bitcoin, you can transfer it to Binance and then you can buy, there's like thousands of cryptocurrencies. You know, I don't know how many exist right now, but well over 2,000. And, you know, with just $20, kind of messing around with some of the volatility in those, something that I've done, which I found, one, it was fun, feels a little bit like a gamble, you know, so like I'm not playing with big money. I'm just putting like you said, $20-$40 in it, something like that. And just seeing how these markets move and how the transactions happen. And then I kind of went deep into like, where is this on the blockchain? Like, how do I track back to that? You know, it's really, really kind of interesting. So And there's the IRS isn't like knocking down my door. You know, there's no negative implications with like security or identity theft or anything like that. Unless you, you know, open yourself up for that and sharing your password in ways like that. But I don't know. I'd say dive in, just to experience it at a low level. What I'm not saying, and I think you would agree on this, is this is not something where you start transferring like your bank account. I've heard horror stories of people like mortgaging their house. The interesting, you know, to invest in Bitcoin and then just losing. That's awful. And nobody should ever do anything like that if you don't understand what you're doing. So I think the advice there that you were giving is to really kind of dip your toe in to kind of understand some of these things. Like it's something that you're willing to just see evaporate, you know, like a $20 bill just goes away.
Yep.
We're all going to be okay.
Yep.
But there's a lot here to understand where, you know, I'm not even going big on anything in the crypto space because I'm not sure I get like which cryptocurrency is going to be around for a long time. I think that's the thing. We're going to see a bunch of them just go away.
Yes.
The interesting thing though about Bitcoin just over the last like 6 months or so that you and I have been really kind of finishing the book is it's been relatively stable.
Yes.
And that's just very interesting to me. I wonder, you know, so it was worth, you know, pennies. Went up to like $20,000. Everybody saw that in the news. Right now, it's been around like $3,000 per Bitcoin for a while.
Yep.
But I mean,
it's steadily growing. It's from my perspective, just getting practical into that, as people hear about the volatility, it has been steadily growing. And I think if we were to compare that to the US dollar, when you hear the term inflation, what does inflation mean? It means it's worth a little bit less, right? And a little bit less. Of that's what happens to our dollar. And there's a lot of factors as to why that is. And at the end of the day, but it's very steady. And so we have an understanding of what it's not going to all of a sudden be worth a lot less or all of a sudden be worth much more. It's very steadily inflating that value. And anyways, sorry, going on a tangent there, but there's an interesting point about the stability of Bitcoin.
Well, it's the interesting thing about in given as well. So, I mean, if something listeners might be familiar with is like if I gift my car to the church or to, you know, some nonprofit, they have to sell the car for something. And then whatever price they receive is the market value. And then that's what I'm receipted as my donation.
Yep.
So I can give you my car and I can say, oh, this is worth, you know, $50,000. And they're like, we only got $12,000 for it. You know, I get a receipt for $12,000. That's the value.
Yep.
The thing with cryptocurrency being on a public ledger, you know, there's a price at any given date and time.
Yep.
If I give through in given, the nonprofit is able to receive that, give me a receipt, but they don't have to liquidate that cryptocurrency. They can continue to hold it.
Yes.
So why is that important?
Why is it important that they continue to hold it?
Or like that they have, you know, the option.
And I think it's similar to they have the option to accept stocks, you know, as gifts. And there are other assets that churches receive, like a car. And I think you then have, it is interesting because when we're in a state of the cryptocurrency could increase in value, that the church could receive those benefits of it. Now, I would say, and I think we put it in the book, and I think this is what's interesting in the book, and we intentionally wrote this in a print on demand because we expect things to change consistently, and we will be updating the book on an ongoing basis, adapting to the trends. But at this point, if somebody's giving to your church, they likely want you to use that as a resource to do more ministry. And so the best practice from my perspective is to convert it to USD, but the church or the organization has the choice as to what they do with that asset when somebody donates it. So in given is allowing the opportunity for that transaction and that receipting to take place from a donation standpoint. And then the church has the resources they need to convert it to, you know, to And you can convert it to USD, or you can convert it to another cryptocurrency if you want to. And you could convert it to another cryptocurrency that you could use for missions transactions in a very efficient way. There's so many paths here, man, that it gets so interesting and exciting and can often feel overwhelming. But I think that's why it's so important that church leaders just simply begin to pay attention now. Mm. Take those first steps of set it up in a given account. And be ready to take cryptocurrency. And even by just setting it up, you might be surprised of who might even come out of. By the way, we now accept Bitcoin. And I think it communicates even like our church is on the cutting edge. We're ready for the trends. It doesn't mean we're unbanking as a church, which, by the way, is an interesting term to Google and learn about unbanking in this process. But it just means you're ready. And in the worst case scenario, cryptocurrency, we're completely wrong. Cryptocurrency flops and you're out $10 a month for the next 6 months ahead of a potential trend. The best case scenario, somebody makes $1 million gift to your church because they invested in Bitcoin 4 years ago with $1,000 and now they're sitting on about $5 million of Bitcoin and they want to give $1 million worth of Bitcoin to their church. I think there's some incredible best case scenarios here. Worst case is really not that bad. And so it just, to me, it's one of those minimal investment, high opportunities, but practically, I think it's just getting ahead of the curve. Nick, any final thoughts in this chaotic and confusing and exciting conversation of cryptocurrency as we wrap up this podcast?
Yeah, we've kind of bounced around a little bit, but I think, my final thought, just what I wanted to say was what we intended to do, and I'm getting a little cheesy here with the plugging of the book, but like we really did write this for ourselves as ministry leaders. Yep. And for those like us that are just want to learn a little bit more. So this is unashamedly, it's really kind of a systematic walkthrough of like, what is currency? It reads a little bit like a textbook, you know, but yep. It's all the right things. I think it's the key things to help get your head wrapped around what this space is, why it might be important. And then we've got some, I think, interesting predictions for the future. And just from here today in 2019, what do we think is going to happen in the next, you know, 6 or 12 months in this space? So if anybody's interested in cryptocurrency in general and how it might apply to your ministry, I do think Crypto for Good was written for you to try to, one, understand it, but two, then think about what applications might exist.
Yeah. I love it. Nick, thank you so much for writing the book alongside of me or in partnership with me. It was a blast to learn cryptocurrency together, to bounce ideas. It was the hardest, I think it's the hardest thing I've ever done.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was going to say the same thing.
And I think, and you and I joked before, for those that are not big book readers, this is maybe one of the thinnest books you'll ever read. But I will say this is a book you're probably going to need to read slowly. Like my social media book is a quick, like 1 hour read and you've got everything you need. This is one of those books you're probably going to want to need to read about 3 times and read through slowly as you begin to grasp the concepts. And I think you'll want to read it and then go down, load Coinbase and get some crypto. Then you want to read it and then go get set up your in given account and start receiving crypto. It was so hard because it was a concept that I thought I grasped it, but what I understand today versus what I understood a year ago when we started this journey is totally different. And honestly, I anticipate a year from now, I'm going to have a whole, my understanding will be so much more significant. But it was a blast. And I'm excited about continuing to update it as the space continues to grow and mature and continuing to lead in this conversation. I hope those of you guys that are listening will go and get a copy of the book. It'll be, I think, a tremendous asset to your ministry and you as a leader. And I hope you'll also go check out Engiven. We'll have a link in the show notes and just go to engiven.com. And check out the site, check out the platform, and jump in, set up an account, and get started accepting cryptocurrency today. It's an exciting day in the world of technology and the day of church and ministry.
And I'm just feeling the need, kind of like on a full disclosure basis. I mean, you did say earlier that we're both involved with InGiven, but we've been involved from the beginning as really kind of consulting on like the marketing side and like giving advice. It's unpaid, but there's an interest that we have there in it being successful. So as we're promoting InGiven, like I just want listeners to know that we do have involvement with those guys and trust them with what they're doing. So.
I think that's been such a privilege in this experience. Is not only are we learning about cryptocurrency, we have literally been able to be hands-on in shaping the future of how nonprofit organizations and specifically churches can be ready to receive and practically what they do with cryptocurrency. Mm. And so in the year of chaos of cryptocurrency, we have been able to really be in the weeds of this whole space. And I believe on the ground floor of something really tremendous and that churches who are predominantly known for catching up with technology can literally be ahead of technology for one of the first times in history from my perspective. And so I am so honored to be a part of InGiven and be a part of their team. And so it is a unique relationship. I don't even know how to define our specific relationship, but we are involved in that. So I appreciate you saying that, Nick. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. If you would, share this podcast with a friend. Share this with the podcast with a friend who might be pessimistic about cryptocurrency or might be really excited about cryptocurrency. We believe this to be a very important conversation for all church leaders, even those that might be opposed to cryptocurrency in this day. We hope this might challenge many of you in your thoughts around this new and developing space, an important space when it comes to the future of the church. We hope you'll also rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you might be listening. Thanks so much for listening to the Social Media Church Podcast.